This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Not only will San Antonio voters be asked to pick a new mayor and city council on May the 6th, there's also a record-breaking city bond package on that ballot, $850 million. And then there's the Alamo College bond, also on that same ballot. That's going to cost $450 million if voters approve. Together, it's a $1.3 billion ask. But on top of that ACCD bond question, there are other questions about the accreditation of three of the colleges in the district and concerns about transparency about decision-making. If you have a question or a comment about the Alamo District bond package or about the accreditation issue or other issues on campuses, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Tweet us at tprsource. We're joined this hour by Bruce Leslie, the chancellor of Alamo Colleges. Also with us is Josh Brodinski. He's the columnist for the San Antonio Express News, and he's written about the bonds. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Thank you. Glad to be back again. Thank you so much.
Great to have you here. So let me ask you, start off, Chancellor Leslie, about the bond. What is the elevator pitch for the bond? And we'll get into the details as the hour goes.
Sure. Well, the first thing is I'm not allowed to advocate for the bond. I can educate. So I'm happy to explain what's in the bond and answer any questions about that.
But so you're not allowed to advocate because of the role that you have as chancellor. You can explain what is in the bond and the process, how we achieve that this is what we're asking for and why this number is the number. But you're not here to be the number one used car salesman in charge of
right.
the bond.
And that's really true for all employees because it's perceived that we'd be using public funding to advocate for, to sell the bond. We're not allowed to do that. So it's not just limited to me. It's really everybody within the Alamo Colleges.
Okay, so tell me about the bond.
Yes.
How did y'all come up with this number?
Sure. We've been working on this for actually a number of years. The last bond that the voters approved was in 2004. It was $450 million. The facilities were all built within the time frame, earlier than was expected and well under budget. In fact, at that time, we were able to invest that money, and we actually generated $50 million more than the $450. So we actually built $500 million worth of new facilities, including a whole new college, Northeast Lakeview College. But this year we have another $450 million, but there's no tax increase built into this, unlike the last time. And that's because we've stewarded our resources so well. We've defeased is the term. We've accelerated the payment back of the bonds. We've sold bonds. We've really managed it well. In fact, we are the only institution I'm aware of that has AAA ratings from both Moody's and Standard & Poor's because we have such a high financial rating because of the wonderful work that our board and our team.
Other than the city of San Antonio.
And they have the same thing, right. And Charles Scully, again, has done a wonderful job in that regard. And they also don't have a tax increase built into their bond. So the $450 really came out of the team saying this is how much we could do without having to raise any taxes. It's not all that we feel we need. We'd love to be able to do more, but the board was very clear we're not going to raise taxes, so we were capped at that $450 million.
Let's go to the phone lines. People are already calling in. They've got questions. The number is 210-614-8980, and Johnny is on the line. Johnny, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing? My question is, on this bond proposal that we're doing, how much is our local taxes is going to be raised, and is going to be also property taxes going to be raised in order to pay for this bond if it passes?
Yeah, good question.
All right, thanks, Johnny, for that call. So first of all, you're going to be – it's property taxes is how
– Yeah, there's really only one set of local taxes. It's property taxes. And what we're saying is there will be no increase in the current rate of property taxes. So there's no additional cost to the taxpayer.
About how much does an average homeowner pay – for Alamo College District in San Antonio?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. That's changed a lot because the acceleration of the property values, so uh-huh. I can't answer that question.
Okay, another caller, Maria, is on the line. And Maria, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. My question is twofold. With three of the community colleges in warning status for their accreditation, what is the reason that the bond issue was placed on the May ballot when the Southern Association will not be issuing their findings until June? And the second thing is, why is a new headquarters building underway with taxpayer money when there are documented physical needs such as mold and mildew removal from campuses that are already existing?
All right, Maria, thank you for that call. There's a lot there, stuff we haven't gotten into yet, but now's a good time to start. So let's talk about this accreditation issue. SACS, which is the body, governing body, that it looks at colleges and universities here, they're saying there's a problem.
Right. So it's the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on College and Schools. That's where it's SACS, COC, is the formal term. So SACS has done a number of audits as part of the normal process. The last one had been done about 5 years ago for Palo Alto College. And then this last year, the three colleges, St. Philip's College, San Antonio College, and Northwest Vista College, their cycle was up, so they did that. There were no issues, no issues whatsoever. But for reasons that we're not really sure of, the SACS COC leadership sent in a special team to do a specific audit to look at how we are organized. Now, let me take a second to explain. We're very unusual in this. There's only one other community college system, Dallas, that is structured the way we are. Across the 11 states of SACS COC, no one else is organized this way. And what I mean by that
is, let's talk about that.
We have individually accredited colleges. Each of the colleges, back in the 50s when accreditation started, St. Philip's College was considered to be the African-American college and SAC the white college. And so in those days, they were not going to merge the two colleges. So separate accreditation was sought, and then that model has continued since that time. So our fifth college, Northeast Lakeview, in fact, is going through that process. And we're very pleased that the audit team came in about 2 weeks ago, tested these additional items that SACS had identified, these six additional items, and found no issues. Okay, so we're feeling that we have addressed those issues, but of course, until SACS meets, we won't be able to deal with that. Now, SACS has scheduled us for December, so it's not June when they meet twice a year. They meet in June and December, but they've scheduled us for December, so we won't know really until December what's going to happen in this regard. So the bond has been in planning for a long period of time. The issues that were raised in this last audit, remember there were no issues at the college level. They raised some technical issues, and they're relatively small technical issues. For example, how we calculate the GPA of students. They were saying, technically, you're not doing it quite right. We've fixed that. There were several other issues. We've fixed them from our perspective. Now, I also am somewhat constrained. I can't project what SACS COC may or may not do. That's stipulated in their rules. So again, I have to be somewhat careful. But because we had this last audit just 2 weeks ago from Northeast Lakeview, and their oral report out to the college community was very positive, no issues, one commendation, in fact, we believe we've addressed these. So,
look, I'm going to take a quick break.
Sure.
And get into more of this issue and more of Maria's questions when we come back from the break. Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980. With me in the studio, Bruce Leslie, Chancellor of Alamo Colleges. We're talking about the May 6th bond proposal. $450 million is the ask. And there are other questions on the table as well. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about May the 6th, and that's when voters in San Antonio will be asked to find a new mayor, maybe keep the same mayor, a city council as well. There's also a record-breaking city bond package, $850 million. But there's another big thing on that ballot. It's not getting a whole lot of press, but it's out there and needs to be talked about, so we're talking about it this afternoon. That's the Alamo College's bond package, $450 million. And with me to explain what's in this bond package and answer questions from listeners is Bruce Leslie, the Chancellor of Alamo Colleges. When we went to break, Chancellor Leslie, we were talking about some of the issues that came up about accreditation and about three of the colleges in the district and whether or not what needs to change in order to deal with the concerns that have been raised.
So let me just finish the first part. So there were no substantive issues. Usually if there are problems with the accreditation, it's around finances or it's around student success or it's around faculty, and we have no issues there. So these are technical issues. So the board felt that given the fact that these were technical issues and not substantive issues, that we should go forward. Secondarily, there are, she's right, the caller is right, there are mold issues, but there are always mold issues.
Well, let me get back to, before we move on to the issues of the mold and stuff, this thing with the, so the issue is that Alamo College is in and of itself, the district mm-hmm. is not go for accreditation,
mm-hmm.
it's these individual colleges.
Right.
And their concern is that when you have one single board
uh-huh.
overseeing five different colleges,
right.
and that and there's questions about their independence
uh-huh.
of these individual colleges. At the same time, there's one board
right.
for the whole. So how are you going to fix that?
So the good point is to acknowledge that the board is the board of each and all colleges. So the issue of independence that people talk about isn't as they perceive it, okay, because the board's policy affect each college the same. So if the board says this is the policy, then all the colleges have to comply with that policy, and that's within SAC's guidelines. So there's a lot of misunderstanding about that issue of, quote, autonomy, unquote, but we feel that we're meeting all of those stipulations that SAC has. Remember, there are 100 or so principles, and they only identified 6 as concerns, and of course have given us ample time to address them and resolve them, which is what we're doing. The board's already taken very deliberate action to do that. So
there's not going to be any major changes in the structure between how the board operates and how these individual colleges operate?
No, we're addressing the 6 issues that they identified and resolving them.
And a lot of people take great pride in their mm-hmm. college that they have, Palo Alto College, fantastic history as a historic black college, also as a majority Latino.
St. Phillips College.
St. Phillips College, right. And Palo Alto College and SAC, all of them have great histories.
Absolutely.
And people want to run and maintain those as well.
And this doesn't deal with that, frankly. I think there's also a lot of misunderstanding and some fear out there that somehow the accreditation model will affect their histories and their cultures, and it wouldn't, not at all. But that's one of the issues it's hard to communicate on because people want to protect those and they're proud of them, and I think that's exactly the way it should be.
Okay, on to the other issue that Maria raised.
So mold comes up, and we deal with it, remediate it all the time, but we actually had a bigger problem for the administration. We're scattered across something like 7 different locations all over the region. Our current primary facility is, in fact, the building I was in, I had to condemn it. So we can't use it because
what building were you in and why did you condemn it?
So in our complex, there are, I don't know, 4 or 5 different, quote, buildings. It's all part of a little small mall that had been built years and years ago. But the air quality, the mold was so severe that we would have had to invest over $500,000 in repairing it. And we knew that someday someone else is going to tear the whole thing down. Why would we spend $500,000? So I moved to a different location in that complex. Other individuals are on Houston Street. Some are at Pat Booker Road. Some are at SAC in portable buildings. We have 450 employees that are in terrible, terrible working conditions, much, much worse than the college campuses. I mean, most of the college campus facilities are new. They're constantly remediated. I mean, we do a great job there. But the district people had a terrible time. So separate from the bond, the board financed the new administration building on its own. So this has nothing to do with the bond, okay? And again, because of our great stewardship of the dollars that we're using. So 450 individuals are going to have working conditions that will be equal to those on the campuses. And these are really important and critical people, and they've been asking for us to do something for some years. I mean, the Houston Street facility, we literally have to have 24-hour police protection there because we have vagrants coming into the buildings. People have gone into the restroom and found naked people in the restroom using the sinks to clean themselves. It's not a good way for our people to have to function. So the administration building is on again, on path. We broke ground. It's being constructed. It's going to be a wonderful facility for us, and it will save money in the long run because we right now we have to pay people to transport themselves from all these multiple locations across the system. Now, in terms of the mold, those have all been remediated. We remediate them on a regular, ongoing basis. We always typically get ahead of them. But we do have buildings that are old. They were built in the 50s and 60s. So one of the strategic elements in the bond is to either refurbish or replace a number of buildings, mostly on St. Philip's and San Antonio College. Those are where the oldest buildings are located. So number one is remediation or replacement. For example, at St. Philip's College, the culinary program is in a building that needs to be torn down and replaced. So we will build a new culinary center. It will also be a restaurant. It'll be a place for the public to come to the east side to have a really great meal prepared by the students. And that program is accredited by a national organization separate from SAC, COC, but they have told us if we don't replace this facility, they will lose their accreditation. So one of the reasons that we're bringing the bond now is because we don't want to lose that accreditation. Secondarily, costs will continue to increase. If we wait another year, which we'd have to do to wait for SACS, we would lose probably a portion of this bond's material because we wouldn't be able to afford it. So
right, but the price tag for that culinary center is $30 million.
Yeah, it's a big project.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a big project. It's an important project.
And
hospitality is a big, big industry in this community, and we provide the foundation for so many of our restaurants and hotels. Staffing is all. In fact, we have a partnership now. We brought the University of Houston here, the Hilton School, a couple of years ago. So now we have a partnership with them. They've relocated part of their program to San Antonio to help those students coming from the Alamo Colleges go on for a baccalaureate and even higher degree for those higher-level positions here in the community. So we've got a great network that we've developed here.
Okay, another caller, Keta. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. My name is Keta LaGrange, and I am a member of LULAC, but we are very interested in education. And my concern is there is a Westside Education and Technical Center. Will they invest in that facility?
Yes.
We do need a college in the west side part of San Antonio.
Thank you. And we had LULAC representation on our Citizens Advisory Committee that vetted all of the recommendations.
So I really couldn't hear what she said because it was a cell phone. What is the title of the?
Okay, it's called the WETSE, the Westside Education and Training Center. And we developed that program about 10, 12 years ago, and it's been a wonderful model. In fact, it has become the model for us to do similar centers in other parts, and we're going to expand them as part of this. But the answer is yes, we're going to be investing in a new WETSE. We're going to be spending, I'm going to have to look at my list here.
$23 million.
$23 million to build out. We're going to replace the existing, which is an old elementary school, with a partnership with Edgewood ISD. The city of San Antonio is part of that, as well as the Westside Economic Development Corporation. So we have a wonderful network. We've just developed what we now call the ETSI, the Eastside Education and Training Center, with the city and a number of other partners as part of the Promise Zone. In this bond, the goal is to also develop a South Side, a SETSI, Education and Training Center. In fact, that will be done in partnership with Southside ISD, and also to buy land for future NETSI, a North Side. So the idea here is we're getting deeper in the communities, we're making access more easily available to our residents, many of whom don't have transportation. We're going from basically fundamental training skill development to regular college courses. So these centers will be expanded, will be deeper into the neighborhoods and the communities, and greater access to education. So I hope that answers your question. But, you know, LULAC has been a great and a very important partner for us for many, many, many years.
Another caller, Carl. And hi, Carl. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I basically have two questions. How much did the taxpayers of ACCD invest in Covey? And as a second question, why are you worth $500,000 a year? Thank you.
All right.
I'll take my answers offline.
Okay. So Covey, is that a question about the seven habits?
Yeah. So let me do the last one first. Well, I'm not paid $500,000 a year, paid much less than that. And the board has kept my salary in context with the other large urban chancellor's salaries. So we've had a model here for our faculty and staff to be paid what we call threeness, so that everybody is within the top tier of salaries for among the top community college, the largest community college in Texas. So the board has applied that model to really all of our employees, faculty, staff, administrators. And that's worked very well for us. In terms of the Covey, so when I came here,
Well, let's talk about what that is first.
Okay.
Covey is the author of
Seven Yeah, so Stephen Covey was the author of a book called The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. It is the largest, most popular leadership book and system in the world, okay? The Franklin Covey Company is the partner that develops materials, not just The Seven Habits, but they have a whole plethora of other materials that they've developed over the years. They've worked with secondary and higher education for years and years. So when I came here, employers were saying, you know, what's missing is a set of essential skills, what we're calling leadership skills. Students have the skills and the discipline, but they don't necessarily know how to work in the organization. So we're having to now spend time retraining them so that they can accommodate to the industry. And this is a national issue. So faculty and staff came to me and said, you know, we've already been using the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People for our students for some years now. So they advised me to look at that. I had read the book years before. It was published in 1989, but I didn't really remember it. So I asked Mayor Castro to organize a group of employers so we could test with them what do they want in our students when they graduate and come to work for them. And they all said, we know the model. It's not something you guys made up. We love the model. We teach it to our own employees. And if you could prepare and certify your students that they would have these leadership skills, then we will give them a front entrance into the interview stage, because we really want that set of skills. So we went back. We worked with the Franklin Covey Company. They developed a certification now. So all of our students who go through the program have the opportunity to be certified. It goes on their transcript so they can go to an employer and say, I'm a certified leader. And it's had a huge and beneficial impact on our students. So we also have here in just Bexar County alone, 61 of our schools that are what's called Leader in Me schools. These are using the Seven Habits for young students, starting in elementary school, and now it's increasing into the secondary schools. And then A&M University has been one of our partners. They now stipulate the Seven Habits for their freshman students. So we're part of a larger network that's actually global in teaching these skills to students who need them to be more marketable and be more successful in their lives.
So Carl asks, how much does it cost?
Well, you know, again, depends. We have a contract with the company that has actually saved us a lot of money. We can produce our own materials. So if you're thinking about, you know, all the students that are introduced to the program that have the learning materials, all of our employees that do it, we actually save a substantial amount of money. I think our contract ends up being less than $1 million, but as a result of that, we have access to all of their tools. And by the way, we teach this to other companies. We make money on this as part of our non-credit education and training programs as well. So putting in that in context, that's a very small amount given the thousands of employees and students that are being educated in this model.
Okay, we're going to take a break and we'll come back, but there were some issues from the Southern Association of Colleges and School Commission on Colleges about the Seven Habits book being used in the classrooms, and we'll get into why that was an issue and how that was rectified when we come back from this break. If you have a question or a comment for Bruce Leslie, the chancellor for the Alamo Colleges, as we talk about the bond election, $450 million, this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source, and we're talking about Alamo Colleges. They're asking Bexar County voters to sign off on a $450 million bond proposal in May. We're with Bruce Leslie. He's the chancellor of Alamo Colleges. And now let's bring in Josh Brodesky. He's the columnist for the San Antonio Express News, and he's written about this bond proposal. He says the timing is not good. So, Josh, welcome to The Source.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Josh, what are your concerns?
Well, I think, you know, in a normal type of situation, the editorial board would have supported the bond. We think that the fact that it doesn't raise taxes is a good thing. The need is evident. We support community colleges in general. But in this case, with accreditation warnings for three of the institutions and not having a clear outcome for those warnings until after the bond vote, from our perspective, the timing is just wrong. That, you know, it's asking a lot of voters to sort of project outward and assume that these issues are addressed. You know, we appreciate Chancellor Leslie's perspective that these are technical issues and that the district's well on its way to addressing them. But the fact is that the vote's in May, and the earliest we're going to know is in June, and we won't have, he said himself, you know, he can't project too far outward. He can speak somewhat confidently, but we just won't have any clarity on that. So simply on timing, we think that it would just be better to wait and make sure that the district's house is in order, so to speak, and then bring the bond to voters.
Well, let me get reaction from Chancellor Leslie.
How are you doing?
Hi, good to hear from you.
You too. I enjoyed the conversation we had with the editorial board a few weeks ago. Obviously disappointed with the editorial, but here's the fundamental issue for us. The timing, you're absolutely right. We would have preferred that Sachs not pick now. We don't know why they pick now. As I said earlier, we've had all these other audits, and these issues were never raised at any one of them. And the three colleges in this last round had no issues when the audit was done according to the normal Sachs COC process. It's this special audit that they sent in, and obviously we had no expectation this was going to happen and certainly had no control over timing. But meanwhile, we have a couple of concerns about not going forward. One is we don't think they're going to give us a June hearing. Right now they've set it for December, and it's the expectation that it will not be until December before we can go before the board with our with our solutions. So that means if we follow the goal that we quote clean the house before we go to the public voters, then we'd have to wait till the following May, so a year from now. And concern there is that with inflation and other cost issues, that we will lose momentum and lose a portion of these projects. And as I said earlier, this is not all of the projects that we would like to fund, but we were constrained, if you will, by the board's decision to stay at the no tax increase level. Secondarily, as I mentioned, we have this wonderful program over at St. Philip's College in culinary, and their accrediting agency has said if we don't essentially replace the facility we're in, which is very small, it's like 17,000 square feet. David, you mentioned about the size of it. It's going to go from 17,000 to about 30,000 square feet. If we don't replace that, we could lose that accreditation. Third, at Palo Alto, there is a program that will be included there, a Center of Excellence in Manufacturing, and there's a huge need and interest by the employer community for us to produce more individuals in particularly what's called the AMT field. But the community also wants to add another of the CAST high schools. So the first CAST high school is being done at SAISD. The second one would be done at Palo Alto. If we can't build that building, we lose that opportunity, we lose that window, and that, again, hurts our ability to produce the graduates that our employers need. So because these are technical issues and not substantive issues, we felt the greater need of the community really should dictate when we go to the voters.
So, Josh, when you hear from Chancellor Leslie basically saying these are not major issues that Sachs is bringing up, that it can be corrected, basically, I'm not really sure how you're saying you're correcting it, but there is some sort of correction measures that they're putting in place that's really not going to change the structure of the district and the colleges. Do you think that's going to satisfy the concerns of many people that we have in Bexar County about the independence of these five different colleges?
Well, I think that's a good question, and you know, my personal answer is no, it won't. But I want to, before I kind of answer that question, I want to just go back and just respond a bit to what Chancellor Leslie said, which is, you know, he had mentioned that we likely won't have any clarity on the accreditation warnings until December. You know, they've asked for June, and it's not, we're not clear if we're going to have a resolution on this in June. So to me, that's, while I'm highly sympathetic towards the issues that come with delaying the bond vote, to me, that's really kind of an unfair burden to place on voters. It's not the voters' responsibility to, you know, account for, you know, cost increases or delays on you know, projects that they plan to, that, you know, Alamo College's plans to cooperate with other community partners. It's the voters' responsibility to sort of weigh the merits of the bond versus, in this case, the question of will the accreditation warnings be addressed, you know. And so I think it's just an unfair burden to be placed on voters at this time. It shouldn't be really their concern or their problem.
Yeah, but these are two different things, though. I mean, but is it fair, though, to conflate the two and maybe cost the Alamo College District this opportunity because of an issue that really has nothing actually to do with the bond itself?
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, a lot of the issues raised are technical, but if you read the warning, it makes it clear that, you know, we are talking about substantive issues that Alamo College is, has been aware of for some time, you know, and that relates to the curricula, right, in incorporating the Covey materials into as a module into one of the classes.
That's the seven habits thing.
That's the seven habits, and then also the warning raises questions about hiring. So I'm not so sure. I mean, I guess how I look at it is, yes, there are technical issues, right, but there's an undercurrent at play here that speaks to sort of Alamo College is trying to consolidate, I guess, for lack of a better term, its structure because of these independent institutions, right? So Alamo College is sort of undermining the academic independence, and I don't think that's going to go away just because these technical issues have maybe been addressed.
So, Josh, can you talk about the concerns that you have about how the Seven Habits book was brought into the classroom?
Well, I think the concern is that it wasn't brought in from faculty. You know, I mean, that's essentially what the warning says, is that, you know, there's no clarity about faculty playing a role in addressing, in creating this curricula. And so it has to start from the ground up and then be incorporated. Now, I mean, in our editorial board meeting, Chancellor Leslie and others brought up the issue of this was, you know, that Seven Habits were being promoted by some faculty members in similar types of leadership courses or precursors to the Education 1300. But I think that we have yet to see any kind of, like, college-wide policy on this or anything adopted by faculty district-wide. So until you get buy-in from the faculty on this, and I'm not quite sure how that's going to be given the tensions that are at play, I don't know how they can move forward with incorporating the Seven Habits into curricula.
So let me
respond.
Yeah, and I
Chancellor
appreciate
Leslie.
Yeah. And again, for most of this, these are technical issues, but you're right. There was one item that was identified by Sachs that of all the curriculum work that goes on constantly across the five colleges, they identified one issue, which was the selection of the board or the direction of the board to use the book. They had no issue with the Seven Habits. They had no issue with the model. They were just saying you can't be prescriptive of deciding what book to be used.
So they could have said, we want a leadership course.
Yeah.
And then the instructor would have chosen the book that they wanted.
Well, so what we did, so the board modified the policy already. So that's what I'm saying. We have corrections going on in place. So the board took out the specific reference to the book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and established a charge to the faculty and administration to collaboratively come back to the board with a recommendation of which model they would propose that the board adopt. And again, because the board is the board of all of the colleges and each of the colleges, whatever model is developed, that would apply to all five colleges. Now, we've already begun those conversations with the faculty leadership. We already have a strategy going forward. So to Josh's question, we're already moving in that direction.
Okay, so I want to have Josh for two more minutes. So Josh, the paper's editorial board, which you're on, recommended to vote no for this bond because of this issue. Is that right?
That's right. We're saying
it could be costly.
It could be costly, right? But it's also a big ask of voters to move forward on a bond. I mean, you know, one question is how often do colleges go forward on a bond? Like, we're asking, how often does this happen that you're asking for voters to approve a bond for colleges that have accreditation warnings? I don't know if there's precedent for that.
Okay, and one last question for you, Josh, before I let you go, is that, are you concerned about the independence? Is it like ACD is one unit when they want to be and five different campuses when it chooses to be? Is that the problem?
Can you rephrase that question?
I mean, a district-wide top-down organization at one time, and then at other times it's five different campuses. It seems to be that they're picking and choosing what they want to be when they want to be.
Well, I think the chancellor has an incredibly difficult job of trying to balance centralization and efficiency with the independence of these colleges, and it's an incredibly complex task to do. You know, I think it obviously can be done, and as they address these technical issues, it'll be done further. I think the chancellor's done quite a lot of good work in terms of the efficiency side, but obviously, to some degree, the administration and the board have lost sight of that independence.
Okay, we're out of time. Josh, thank you so much. Josh Brodesky, San Antonio Express News. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The best thing voters could do for the Alamo Colleges is to reject its planned $450 million bond in May. That's what the San Antonio Express News wrote in their opinion about this bond. We're joined by Bruce Leslie, the chancellor of Alamo Colleges. He can't argue one way or the other because his hands are tied legally in his position, but you know, Alamo College is saying they need this $450 million that's on the May 6th ballot in order to renovate and rejuvenate the campuses across San Antonio and prepare the city for the million new arrivals that we're expected to see by the year 2040. And new expectations, new demands are being put on community colleges every day to prepare the workforce for tomorrow. And so, Chancellor Leslie, as we close out the hour, as we talk about this bond package, what did you think about Josh Brodesky's opinions there?
Yeah, I appreciated his acknowledgement of the challenge that we have. As I said, there's only two systems, Dallas and us, that are organized this way. And Dallas, by the way, is going through similar issues with Sachs COC as well. It makes it more complex to do all the things that we need to do in this model, but it is the model we have. And so, as I said earlier, we are doing everything we can to comply with what Sachs has raised. We didn't know, we didn't expect the timing of it. But I would disagree in a couple of things. One is there's an incongruence here because the Express News has endorsed the Southside bond at a time when their whole board is being replaced by TEA because of major issues there. Our issues are relatively minor compared to that. Our board is wonderful. We've got the voters should be very, very proud of this board. We are considered one of the leading community colleges in the nation. We've won the Texas Award for Performance Excellence three times now. We're one of the most efficient organizations. And this is the key. 10 years ago, when we were really operating fully, quote, independently, the four colleges at the time, we had the lowest rate of degrees awarded of any community college in the state. Today, we are the largest producer of degrees awarded. So the students have benefited enormously from these systems that we've put in place. And secondarily, and this is really important, particularly in this community, students who transfer to university, particularly the public universities from Alamo Colleges, are more likely to graduate with a baccalaureate than pretty much any other community college in the state of Texas. So the quality is there, the performance is there, and it's being done by our faculty. So a lot of these political issues that come up are raised by a relatively small group of individuals, but our faculty are doing a wonderful job. Our students are just learning, transferring to not just local universities, but also to some of the best universities in the entire country. So we're doing some really, really great work. But why they would endorse the South, you know, San Antonio.
That's a different thing, though.
It's not a different thing because it's the same issue. If the college has these lingering accreditation issues, but the other school district has major accreditation issues. It's the same thing, but we're being evaluated differently by the Express News. But
okay, let me get a caller here. Joseph has called in. Joseph, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. So, Chancellor, you mentioned Alamo College's success rate relative to other community colleges. But what I haven't heard from you or from anyone speaking for the college ever are per 100 statistics showing exactly what Alamo College is accomplishing. And as far as I can tell, and this is not just true of Alamo colleges, it's true of a great many community colleges across the country. But the statistics run a little like this. About 75% of the people that register and attend classes at Alamo colleges state on their application that their goal is to get a certificate or to transfer to a four-year school. Of that 75%, nationally, about 33%, Alamo colleges, about 25%, actually do transfer. Of those that transfer, about 17% actually graduate with a four-year degree in 6 years. That's a 0.031 success rate for Alamo colleges. Nationally, it's only about 0.042, so you're not that far behind the rest of the country. Yet, with a less than 5% success rate, how can we address infrastructure issues when the fundamentals of the college are so deeply flawed?
Joseph, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Yeah. And so, Chancellor?
Thank you. I really appreciate your knowledge about the data, because that's where we are really focusing on. We've become a very data-driven organization, and our numbers are different than what you just quoted. They're much better. But here's the bigger picture. You know, in a way, it's inappropriate to measure community colleges only on the numbers who graduate or who transfer, and here's why. So many of our students come not for a degree or certificate. They come because they need to upgrade their skills. They're coming to us as part of a larger transition. They're military individuals, or their jobs are taking them around, so they're going to multiple institutions. They're starting at UTSA, coming back to us, maybe going on to A&M after that, maybe going back to UT, whatever. So we've looked at all those numbers, and here's what our numbers say. So our graduation rate now has gone, when I was first came here, about 7%. We're now about 24, 25, 26%, depending on which campus you're looking at. But if you also add those who are still enrolled, remember, most of our students are part-time. They're taking 6 to 9 hours a semester, more or less, coming and going. Takes them more than 6 years to graduate. And by the way, we have a strategy to try to help students accelerate through, because they'd be more likely to graduate. You have another 30% of students there. You have another large percent, about 30%, that are transferring to university, and so they don't count as graduates because they haven't graduated from us. They've transferred before they graduate. And as I said a minute ago, the percentage of that cohort that transfer, about 63% of them are going to be graduating, and that's only from the public universities. We don't have the data from the coordinating board for the private universities, but we're trying to get that from them directly. And then there's a final cohort of about 20% that leave us in good standing, meaning a C or better, but we don't know where they went. They may have moved out of state, they may have worked out of state, they may be deployed because we have so many students who are military. So when you aggregate all of that together, it's about a 77% success rate. So you have to disaggregate and not just measure us by degrees awarded. But as I said, we've gone 224% increase in degrees awarded in just the last 5 years.
Okay, we can argue about numbers, and it's, and anyone can argue numbers. You're very good at coming up with these numbers that show that this you're in a good light. But the deal is $450 million being asked for by the Alamo colleges. How is that going to help San Antonio provide better jobs, higher income, and better futures for our population?
Absolutely. And again, we're in a context that the state continues to cut our resources. We've saved about $300 million since 2010 as a result of state cuts and other cost efficiencies that we've had to create. We've not laid anybody off. We've not cut salaries. In fact, we gave faculty a 7% salary increase this past year. So we've husbanded our resources really, really well. But we're also anticipating, as you said, 1 million new residents coming to this area in the next 10, 15 years. And we have employers that are saying we need more of certain fields. We need greater pools of students coming through so we can hire those individuals in high-demand, high-wage jobs. So building a center of excellence in manufacturing at Palo Alto College and adding the CAST High School to that as part of our early college program, adding this new center of excellence in culinary at St. Philip's College, adding a center of excellence in finance at San Antonio College, as also in the First Responders Academy, accelerating that into a center of excellence. Culinary, I mentioned the culinary, and then the Westside Education and Training Center and the additional sites to get deeper into the neighborhood. We expect we're about 60,000 credit students now and about 20,000 non-credit, so about 90,000 students, but we expect to be about 130,000 students over the next several years. Some of this is also infrastructure, particularly IT and security. Risk management is a big issue, and of course with guns on campus now, with other issues, people need to feel safe. We need to be investing in more security systems as well. So the bond will help immediately in those areas.
Okay, Stephen has called in. Stephen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Dr. Leslie, Alamo College has developed a green and sustainable policy in 2012. Will the projects included in the bond proposal be bound by this policy?
Yeah, and you know, again, we're not necessarily looking for platinum level or gold level, but we are building into each of the projects, including the separate but new administration building that we're developing. We have a real commitment. In fact, we're winning, I keep saying we're winning awards because we are all the time, in our green practices. Our director of facilities, John Stribos, just came back from making a presentation on the use of
sure.
I was kidding about
so,
it.
So the short answer is yes.
Yes,
you
the
are
short
following
answer
those.
Is yes. Yes,
so,
we are.
So to the deal about San Antonio, why does San Antonio, as a city and its character and its culture and what we do and our academic habits that we have here, why do we need to have a very robust community college system?
Great question. There's an aspiration that I love about San Antonio to be the great city of the 21st century. We're a unique place, we're a unique culture, we have a unique diversity of people, and there is this aspiration that San Antonio be recognized as one of the great cities. To do that, we need to have a strong middle-class economy. So the middle skills, the technical skills, which are increasing not only in their demand but also in the wages that are paid to people who are going into these fields, like the robotics programs that we're doing now with Toyota but expanding to a host of other companies. But we need the facilities, we need the equipment, we need the faculty to do these programs.
And so, San Antonio is also a city of second chances.
This is where
maybe you bombed out the first go around in your higher education aspirations, but
you have nowhere to go but here.
You can go to the ACCD and find a second chance.
Absolutely.
And maybe it'll make it work. May 6th, that's the day people can decide $450 million. It's also when San Antonio has $850 million. I guess you're hoping people are going to be in a generous mood that day.
Well, and part of our work is with the city of San Antonio. So
okay.
Absolutely.
All right. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.